Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Firesider, a health tonic based on the traditional New England cure-all of raw apple cider vinegar and honey. For more information, visit firesider.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Fomen About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
And we are your hosts on this weekly show.
On all things fermented, right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Archived on that site as well as Stitcher and iTunes.
That's right. That's right. And we are very happy to be back after Thanksgiving week. We had a very great time out in Arizona, where my father lives. And we hit lots of different breweries. Among them were?
Well, we started at Osho Nano Brewery.
Osho? You mean the outrageous homebrewers social outpost?
Yes. Then we headed to Sun Up. We also hit Arizona Wilderness, the Beer Research Institute, Fate, and 8-Bit Ale Works.
What were some notable beers that you liked from that? Anything inspiring?
Yes, Chris.
I don't mean to put you
well,
on the spot,
both.
But I'm going straight to
Fate.
I have
my
right
beer
now.
List. Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to say that. We did. Actually, we enjoyed every single brewery that we went to. Phoenix has a very different beer scene. It's a pretty new beer scene. Some of the breweries that we visited have only been open for a year or less, I believe. And most of the breweries that are there also are full restaurants as well, mm-hmm. which is a little bit different, very different than the New York City scene and different than some other cities as well. I would say, yeah, Fate, that was probably one of your favorites.
Because of their candy bar stout. And so a lot of people do a lot of chocolate beers. This one was candy bar stout. It basically tasted like Snickers in a glass, and that's my favorite candy bar out there. But it had nuts and salt and the chocolate. The salt kind of really, really brought it some brightness to it rather than being a thick, cloying chocolate jam.
Definitely. I think it was one thing that's interesting. I don't drink high alcohol beers very much these days. And we actually had quite a few Imperial Stouts that were slightly higher alcohol, but actually were pretty dry, which I really liked. I prefer a bigger beer that's drier. So that was one thing that was kind of fun for me, is I got to drink outside of the normal styles that I prefer to drink.
And that was interesting because I feel like that's a regional thing. I think that because it's Arizona, because you have this hot nature, this dry heat, you don't really want a big cloying beer.
Yep.
So the residual sweetness overall on all the beers tended to be less than we have in the Northeast.
Which is awesome. I also have to give a shout out to 8-Bit Ale Works. So that was the last brewery we went to. We went there on the Friday morning. They opened at 6 a.m. for a special release on the Friday morning after Thanksgiving. So that was their Black Friday celebration. And they had one of their, it's a stout called Mago Negro. It comes in at 6.5%. So they had that straight up, and then they had six different variations. And we had several that were very good. I think my favorite... Two favorites were the Pirate's Loot, which was their coconut.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had another one, which I think I didn't... Oh, no, the other one was called Mago Negro. Sorry, that's the one with coffee. So I didn't actually check into the original, although we did taste some.
The Mago Negro was pretty awesome.
Yeah, so that was done with a local coffee. That was pretty cool. All right, announcement. Oh, also, huge congratulations to our friend Jason Saylor, owner of Strong Rope Brewing. He had his soft opening for his Kickstarter supporters on Saturday night. I believe the official opening to the public is going to be December 17th, if I remember correctly. Does that sound right, Chris?
Remembering Saturday correctly is my struggle. It was a long day. But yes, that sounds right to me.
It's around then. So if you want to follow him on Twitter or like him on like the brewery on Facebook, and you can find out more. It's a great brewing company in the Gowanus neighborhood, right on the edge of Gowanus and Park Slope. So yeah, check that out as soon as he opens. This Saturday, if you are in New York City, Bitter and Esters, our local homebrew shop, is having a barrel aging with Goose Island event. There are two sessions at 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. There are tickets still left. Hang on a minute. That is this Saturday, December 12th. They're going to have a lecture and tasting with Mike Siegel, a Goose Island brewer. And they're also going to be tasting a number of Goose Island's barrel-aged beers. So there are two seatings at 1 and 4, and I believe there are tickets still left for both of them. But there's only 25 seats per session, so if you want to go, get on that now.
I'm excited about today's show.
Me too. Once again, it's a guest, two guests that we've been wanting to have on for a long time, since GABF last year.
Yep. I remember that moment vividly when you came running over to me like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. These guys are doing amazing stuff. You have to taste this. And they're from Southern Illinois, where you spent much of your life.
Yes, where I grew up.
And who are we talking about?
All right. So we have Scratch Brewing Company, which is based in Ava, Illinois. And we have two of the three co-owners and co-brewers on, Marika Josephson and Aaron Clyden. Hopefully I'm not butchering the names.
No, you got it right.
All right.
Sorry, you guys.
Welcome to Femet About It.
Marika, we're so glad to be talking to you now.
So you, along with Ryan Talkstein, is your third co-owner and co-brewer. So tell us a little bit about yourselves. How did you get started homebrewing?
Almost 3 years ago, and all three of us were homebrewers, and we'd been doing a lot of experimentation on a homebrew scale with using ingredients that we were getting locally, whether they were from farmers in our area or things that we were foraging for in the woods. Aaron grew up in the woods where we now have the brewery, so he knows a lot of the plants in the area, so we were able to experiment with a lot of things that we'd never tried in beer before, and it was pretty exciting.
Awesome. So when did you start homebrewing, and why?
I actually started homebrewing when I moved to Southern Illinois from New York. When I moved out here, actually it was kind of the same in New York, too. It was probably 6.5 years ago. It was just on the cusp of, you know, all the big boom and microbrewing, and there wasn't really a whole lot out here in Southern Illinois, you know, for craft beer, and so I just started brewing to drink the styles that I was really enjoying drinking elsewhere, and I just kind of fell in love with it. I'll pass you over to Aaron so he can tell you his story.
Awesome.
Hello.
Hey,
hi,
Aaron.
Aaron.
So, I started homebrewing in actually in college. I made a bunch of wine, but then I kind of switched over to beer. I had a roommate in Colorado that brewed a lot, and so I started brewing out there in 2006 or so. I returned home and met Marika and Ryan, and we combined forces to start a brewery.
So where did you guys meet in Southern Illinois?
We met at a, there was a beer tasting event at a local, it was kind of like a packaged liquor bar. And every Monday night they did beer tastings. So you were able to bring a homebrew. So each week, Marika, Ryan, and myself would all bring our beers there and sample a bunch of other beers. And so that's where we met initially.
And Aaron, you do much of the foraging, right?
Correct.
How did you get into foraging and learning of what's around you?
When I was little, we would, with my family, my mom had a lot of wildflowers in her garden, so we were always going out in the woods and identifying wildflowers and maybe transplanting some and bringing them back to her flower beds. And my grandmother was always into harvesting wild greens, and she was from a farm, and she could pretty much do everything. So through my parents and my grandmother, and then on my own, my high school job and job during junior high in the summers was to dig herbs, medicinal herbs. So I would dig ginseng roots and golden seal, bloodroot, and a couple other ones, and that's how I made my money in the summer as a high school kid.
Oh, wow. What kind of things did you do before beer with those? Were you making mainly kind of teas and tonics?
So you were generally, I would make teas and stuff, but largely I would, I always walk through the woods with like a plant ID book, or I always walk through the woods with somebody who knew a whole lot more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of like a sponge, and, picked up all kinds of plant knowledge through other people and through books. So
this it's your foraging and your use of these ingredients that had Mary so excited at GABF 2 years ago.
Well, also just because GABF the year before last, you guys had showed up with 5 gruets, which I don't think anybody else on the floor was pouring.
No.
All gruets, and they were delicious. And then this year you also showed up with very unique beers, all brewed with different styles of wood. So when did you start, when you started homebrewing, were you just homebrewing kind of, right, you know, standard style beers? When did you start brewing with what you, with local ingredients and what you had foraged?
I think I have a really hard time of following any kind of recipe, so I was always throwing stuff in from the get-go. One of the first beers I brewed was actually a gruet, and then I brewed another beer with persimmons and aged it on oak. So those were my first couple of beers. I was always interested in using maybe local things that other people weren't using that I thought were really incredible, added really incredible flavors to stuff.
So let's talk about some of the beers that you guys are, beers or gruets that you guys are brewing now. Where does your inspiration come from? Do you have maybe something that you forage for or that you've tasted before or seen before and then build from there, or do you guys work together? How does it work most of the time?
It's kind of a mix. Sometimes, you know, it's, you know, we brew entirely seasonal beers, so sometimes it's just something that's growing in the woods that we know is coming up. For instance, pawpaws always are dropping fruit at the beginning of September, so, you know, we know that's kind of the time of year to do that. But other times, you know, it could be that Aaron's walking through the woods and he'll stumble upon a plant that maybe we've never even used before, and he'll bring it into the brewery, and the three of us will kind of, you know, stand around in the kitchen and smell it and taste it, maybe make a tea with it and kind of get a sense of its bittering and flavoring and aroma potential, and then kind of just brainstorm different ideas of things we could do with the beer. You know, a lot of times we'll think about just, you know, standard beer styles, or sometimes we'll just kind of riff on, you know, different malt profiles. We don't use a lot of hops in our beer because they tend to overtake the character of the beer. But sometimes a hop can be a good complement for various kinds of earthy or floral types of flavors and aromas.
When you did the wood experiment for JBF, what are some of, or do you use wood a lot, woods and barks?
We do. This year we were experimenting with that more than in the past, too. We were kind of got really excited about using bark for the first time earlier this year. We used shag bark, hickory bark, just toasted it and then used it in the boil. And it had this amazing, like, marshmallow kind of incense quality that we'd never had before. And so we suddenly kind of went off on a tangent in our brewing world, I guess, and tried a bunch of different barks. We did wild cherry bark, sycamore, basically anything we could get our hands on. And that led us also kind of down the path of wondering, well, you know, we use different, you know, we use fruits and things from trees. You know, a lot of times people use roots, but, you know, what would a beer taste like that used the whole entire tree, from the leaves to the branches to the bark, maybe the sap, the fruits, nuts, all kinds of things? You know, what would a beer taste like that had all of those components in one? And, you know, how would it sort of represent that tree? So that was kind of our the impetus, I guess, behind the beers that we brought to GABF were, you know, here's five different beers made with five different trees, and here's what they do. And they were all really different and fascinating in their own way.
Absolutely. What size system are you doing this on? How much are you yielding per batch?
We're on a base. I like to call it a glorified homebrew scale. Mm-hmm. It's more or less kind of the more beer structure, and it's about a barrel and a half to two barrels at a time, and then we'll double batch often in the three or four barrel fermenters. So our biggest fermenter is four barrels, and the smallest is one and a half, and it's somewhere in between there for our batches.
That's awesome. I want to get back to how you made that legal in Southern Illinois in just a minute.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Fermenter Battle.
Fermenter Battle will be.
Today's program was brought to you by Fire Cider. Did your grandmother ever tell you to drink raw apple cider vinegar? It's good advice, and more common than you may think. For generations of New Englanders, a tot of vinegar was a morning ritual. Taken daily, a tablespoon of unfiltered apple cider vinegar can help support immune function and digestive functions. To the base of certified organic apple cider vinegar, Fire Cider added whole, raw, certified organic oranges, lemons, onions, ginger, horseradish, habanero pepper, garlic, and turmeric. They let this mixture steep for 6 weeks at room temperature to preserve the living vinegar culture and delicate flavors of the ingredients. Lastly, they blend a generous helping of raw wildflower honey into the mix. The result is potent but balanced, offering layers of sweet, tart, and spice. Fire Cider tastes great on its own or as an addition to tea, juice, or salad. Fire Cider ships direct from their online store and is available at over 500 locations nationwide. Use their store locator to find one near you and ask for a free sample. For more information, visit firesider.com.
Hi, this is Harry Rosenblum, host of Feast Your Ears here on Heritage Radio Network. This is my first season as a host, but at the Brooklyn Kitchen, we've been supporting Heritage Radio for many years, and I really believe in what Heritage does. It is a fantastic network that really highlights everything that is going on in food in America, from restaurant openings to farms, to my show, where I feature interesting people with interesting stories related to food. But Heritage is a not-for-profit. We don't make any money. Most of the hosts do this because we love to do it, and we really do need your help as listeners. We'd love to have you listen, whether you can give any money or not. The website will still be up. You can still stream your favorite shows. But if you do like the programs here on Heritage Radio, we really would encourage you to go to the website, heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart in the upper right-hand corner, and give whatever you can. If you drink coffee every afternoon while you listen to shows on Heritage, then maybe you can give us the cost of a cup of coffee once in a while. If you want to become a larger member, there's all kinds of great things you get if you become a member of the station and a larger supporter. So please join me, join the Brooklyn Kitchen, join our other great sponsors, and become a member.
Welcome back to Fermenter About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is episode 143. We are talking to Marika Josephson and Aaron Clyden of Scratch Brewing Company. We're so excited to be talking to you guys. You guys have a small one-and-a-half barrel system in Ava, Illinois, and that touches my heart because I was brewing on a one-and-a-half barrel system in the basement of a restaurant in Manhattan, and it's a lot of fun, a lot of work, but one of the advantages is being able to be extremely experimental, and you guys are doing that to the fullest, using the ingredients you have around you. How has the reception been for you guys in your 3 years of of existence?
It's been amazing. We've had a lot of interest, just kind of in the concept of foraged beers, since not too many people are doing that. And even just in our local community, we've had a ton of support, both from Carbondale, which is kind of the biggest city near where we are, but also a lot of those kind of smaller, sort of farming communities that are around us too. We have a pretty diverse, I think, group of people that come out on the weekends and have beer and just enjoy being out in the woods at the brewery.
Are most of the sales that you're doing out of the brew pub?
Yeah, we do. I would say 90%+ of our sales are at the brew pub, and then we send a little bit out in kegs around Southern Illinois, and then up to like Champaign, Urbana, and then Chicago.
And as far as the different beers you've done in your 3 years existence, you've done roughly 80 or more at this point, I'm sure. And
yeah,
how often
probably two or three times that.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have flagship necessarily, or do you?
What's that?
Do you have flagships, or do you?
Oh, no,
that's
we don't.
Isn't it?
there's some beers that we do seasonally. Lots of, like, one of the ones that's been fairly popular has been just, like, some beers with basil in the summer. But, yeah, we don't have anything that we have on year-round, no scratch flagship.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the taproom experience. What's the experience when they go? I have not been able to go yet. I'm dying to go, especially because I was born in Carbondale and I grew up in Carterville for my first 13 years. But anyway, so tell us what the experience is like.
Well, the brewery is located in like 80 acres of wood, so it's completely surrounded by trees, and then our small garden and our hop rows and a couple of goats and chickens, and there's a lot of seating outside, so you're kind of just sitting right in the middle of the place where we source almost all of our ingredients, other than our barley. And then inside, we built the building ourselves, and basically used a lot of elements that we got from local people and places, lots of auctions, and a high school that was being torn down. We rescued the chalkboards and turned them into our tables and our bar top, and so lots of elements that are also kind of, I would say, I guess, indigenous to the area, that a lot of people even recognize from, we have people come out who went to the high school that was torn down and remember the chalkboards and stuff like that. So
that's awesome.
It's got a nice vibe for sure.
And do you guys serve by the pint? Do you fill growlers? You have food sometimes,
yeah.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do tastings of everything, pints. we fill growlers to go. We have a small kitchen. Aaron built a wood-fired oven, so we do hearth bread and that on the weekends, and pizzas. And then we have a small menu of stuff that's all sourced from local cheesemakers, salami makers. We pickle various things and put them on our appetizer platters. So, everything that we put on our food menu is kind of follows the same ethic as our beer.
So let's talk about some of the beers that you guys have on tap right now. What are a couple that are particularly that are fun and that really mean a lot to you?
We've got a Forest Porter on right now, which is a stronger porter that we brewed with staghorn sumac, wild cherry bark, and then aged it for a little bit on fresh oak heartwood that Aaron chopped out of a log, basically. And we just toasted it in our oven and let it sit kind of on the secondary for not too long, not more than a week, actually. But what's amazing about that beer is that the sumac is really tart and sometimes has almost a strawberry flavor, but in combination with the wild cherry bark, it gives an amazing kind of tart cherry flavor. There's no cherries in it at all, but it has this amazing tart cherry flavor with kind of an oaky, something almost cinnamony type finish from the oak. I like that beer a lot.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. We have the very end of a batch of the single tree hickory, which we brought with us to GABF. That was the sour hickory beer we brewed with all different parts of the hickory tree. So we use the leaves and the branches and then the hickory nut, the nuts and the hulls, and then we let it sit on toasted hickory bark in the fermenter. We put some in the boil, too, which, again, gives it that kind of marshmallow incense character. But that one is sour. There were no hops in it, and it kind of goes sour naturally. And so it's got this, you know, tart, lemony, you know, lactobacillus kind of fermentation, and then with this really interesting kind of sweet, at least you perceive it to be sweet, character from the hickory bark. That one's really neat.
When you started the brewery, I know I'm jumping around topics a little bit here, but when you started the brewery, you were the first brewery south of Springfield, right?
Big Muddy was, and then I think that, yeah, there were a couple that opened in Southern Illinois right around the time we did, and I can't remember exactly who was, you know, second or third or whatever, but Big Muddy was definitely first, and then we followed shortly thereafter.
And now we just crossed the threshold. We now have more breweries in America than we've ever had before, and at the time that you started, you had a blog that you were writing about, and with some of that, with advocating for different laws in Southern Illinois for self-distribution, and so you probably helped this. What were the struggles at the time?
Well, it was one thing that Big Muddy was fighting was that there weren't specific laws about self-distribution. It was all a little bit murky. And then Anheuser-Busch came in and wanted to buy a stake in one of the distributors, and they were basically blocked from doing that because it would have meant that they would have been self-distributing their beer here. And so in turn, they sued the state, because a couple of breweries were self-distributing in Illinois, but it wasn't concrete in the law whether they could or couldn't. After a lot of litigation and back and forth, they ended up codifying in law that production breweries could self-distribute up to a certain amount of barrels per year, which will never, probably ever in our lifetime create a scratch.
Right.
And it was good for us because we started as a brew pub, which does not allow self-distribution, and we ended up changing to a manufacturing facility after almost a year, I think, so that we could self-distribute, and that's been great for us. We have been able to, you know, it's harder for small breweries, especially startups, to have to go through a distributor and sometimes you know, first of all, give up the income, but then also be able to keep up with the demand that kind of distribution brings. So we've been able to do it the way that, you know, works best for us, and that's been really good.
That's awesome. And I totally feel that. Having the beer out there, I mean, still keeping 90% of your stuff in-house, sold in-house, your margins and chance of success is better. But by having a beer out there, even on occasion, it's a great advertisement for getting people. I mean, the point is to drive people to Scratch, because that experience is what people should experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you guys are doing in New York with the farmhouse breweries is really awesome, too. And I'd really like to be able to see something like that happen in Illinois and in many other states where agriculture is a big part of the economy.
Absolutely. Now, are you guys, your guys are using almost all local ingredients, and that includes grain?
Not grain yet. Grain hasn't been grown in our area for a long time, and then the malting is a whole other separate issue. Yep. But we actually hope to be doing that soon. We have some farmers that are going to start doing some work with us in the next year. We're going to do some experiments with grain farming here, and then we're going to attempt to do some micro malting on site. So we have some fun stuff in store, and I hope that eventually we'll be able to create a product that is 100% sourced from our area.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing we've seen in New York with the farm brewing licenses. We've seen a lot more local state malts or maltsters open in the state, and I think regardless of, you know, whether each state has a farming license or not, that's definitely craft maltster is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what do you guys have coming up for the winter?
Well, As we get a little bit later into the winter, we'll be tapping maple trees and birch trees again for the sap and brewing with the sap. We've done that every year since we've opened, and basically we replace water entirely with sap from the tree and use it the same way you would mashing in and sparging and stuff like that. Those beers are they're a lot of work, but they're also a lot of fun, and they make a great product too.
That's something I've been wanting to do. We actually have friends that have trees on Staten Island and upstate. So we haven't done that. I've been wanting to do that as a homebrewer, and I haven't yet. But I know there's a very short window as to when you know, get the sap, and then you have to use it pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a lot of fun. And for a homebrew scale, you don't need quite as much as you do for even a barrel and a half. So it's a lot more doable, too, from a homebrew perspective.
Absolutely. And are you guys building those beers? Have you built them around the other parts of the tree as well? Or are you using those with different ingredients?
We've done a lot of different, we've done it different ways. This last year, we did that kind of single tree concept with it. So we had the single tree maple, and we used the sap and the bark and some branches. There weren't really leaves on the trees at the time, because that was roughly February. And then the birch we did the same way this year too. But we've also done some like historical styles, a Gotland Stricka, kind of a smoked cedar beer, and you know, some strong porters. And we found that the beers with darker malts kind of work a little bit better with the sap, because there's a lot of minerals and stuff in the sap, and the lighter beers tend to bring those out a little bit more, and they have kind of more of like a green apple, kind of stony sort of quality that is a little bit off-putting. So we like to use kind of the darker malts and stuff like that in those beers.
That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have events there as well, correct? Or you have you have local music and kind of thing.
Yeah, we do. We've been doing music this year. We did it in the summer. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. It's a good kind of community gathering space for our area. So there's been a lot of interest from different people, you know, people in film, artists, writers and stuff to come out and have events. And we're so happy to host it and just see that stuff going on around Southern Illinois.
That's awesome. And if people want to visit you, probably the closest, they could definitely come from St. Louis, fly into St. Louis, mm-hmm. or I guess Springfield. Yep. I've never flown into Springfield, but I assume that you could do that as well. How far are you guys from Springfield?
We're about three and a half hours from Springfield. We're 2 hours from St. Louis and 3 hours from Memphis or Nashville. So those would be close places too. We're about 5 hours from Chicago, but there is a train that goes right down to Carbondale, so that's actually, it can be an easy trip down too. We're a few hours from a whole lot of places, but we don't have an airport, you know, right. We do have a very small airport in Southern Illinois, so I don't know. That does go
in
from
Marion,
St. Louis,
yeah.
to yeah. In Marion, yeah.
Exactly. I have flown one of those teeny planes before.
Yeah, yep.
How big is the town of Ava? How many people are in Ava?
How many people are in Ava? 650, Aaron says. 650
people in Ava? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chris has never lived anywhere.
Yeah, we're just outside the town.
Awesome. So if people want to find more out about you, you can go to scratchbeer.com. Oh, I know. I have one more question. Have you guys done any collaborations?
Yeah, we did do one in January this year with Fonta Flora in North Carolina.
We met them at the Beers Made by Walking Project.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went out there and brewed a beer with them, did something with Pine, and then they came out and brewed a Stein beer with us at our place.
What is a Stein beer for those people that are out there listening that might not know?
Yeah, so that's a fun one, too. It's also a historical German style. You heat up granite rocks in a big bonfire, basically, until they're glowing hot, and then you heat the wort entirely with the rocks. There's no other heat source, no direct fire, anything like that. It's just the rocks in the wort.
Rock submerged in the wort.
What's that?
The rock submerged in the wort.
Yes. Exactly. And we have two big Buffalo Trace barrels that we use for that. We just cut the tops off and we put the wort in there, and they are wonderful boiling vessels. we did a beer with Fauna Flora at our place in that. And then we did a collaboration late in the summer with Perennial in St. Louis, a wee heavy with toasted hickory bark, which we had that at the Beers Made by Walking thing, too. And then in February, we're going to go out to Austin and brew a beer with Jester King in the coming year. So that's going to be a lot of fun, too.
That's awesome. That's very fun.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. We're always love to have your beers at JBF and Beers Made by Walking Fest, and
absolutely
definitely have to come out and visit. But for all of you who are in the Midwest, if you have not been to Scratch, you are missing something really good. So try to make your way out there. Again, if you want to find more information, scratchbeer.com. And thanks again for being on.
America, Aaron, thank you. Foment about it.
Also, we would be remiss to not remind you that Heritage Radio Network is a not-for-profit station, as Harry mentioned over the break. Chris and I and most of the other hosts are volunteering our time because we love talking about food or beverages or animals or what all of these many, many wonderful shows that are on heritageradionetwork.org. So it's a not-for-profit. We would love your support. There is no amount that's too small and certainly no amount that's too big either. So if you go to heritageradionetwork.org, press on the little
heart
beating heart in the upper right-hand corner, and please send us some love.
You are our lifeline.
Yeah. And if you haven't, check out the other shows on this station. There is absolutely amazing variety of shows. The quality of the host and the programming is fantastic. Chris and I feel extremely lucky to be a part of the Heritage Radio Network family, and I hope you guys enjoy listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.